And oh, this is an interesting story. Everyone got introduced to curling, I guess, in the United States based on the Olympics. I remember completely the whole process when I first saw curling. I was, and I forget which Olympics it was. It was in like 1998 or 99, if I'm thinking correctly, it's probably 1998. And I was watching curling, and I said, and then they were broadcasting all this because I was in Canada on a tour in a hotel room. And I'm like, what is this? Looks like people are sweeping. All right. So I'm excited to welcome pro curling superstar, John Collin. John, how are you? Podcaster, everything in between. But John, how are you? And how the heck did you get involved in curling?
I'm great, Neil. Thank you so much for having me. And also thank you for lying and saying I'm a curling superstar. That's the first time anyone's called me that, and I love it. I peaked at like 25 in the world. So I don't know if that makes me a superstar, but I do love hearing it. And you can absolutely refer to me as that anytime you like. It's true. It is so true. So you were thinking of 98. That was the debut of curling in the Olympics, actually, in Nagano. And shortly after that is when I started curling, actually. So it wasn't because of that Olympics, I don't think. But a lot of Canadians curl, obviously, and a lot of them get into it through their parents. That's usually the kind of gateway. My parents do not care for curling. I was like a hockey kid growing up and had the classic Canadian hockey dad and all of that stuff. I discovered curling. I was probably 12, I guess. And my elementary school, one of my teachers, took us curling, and I just loved it right away. It only cost $50 for the entire year, and it didn't conflict with hockey. So started doing it through that, and, never looked back, quit hockey 2 years later, and, curled competitively for over 20 years.
Now, did you ever get to the Olympics?
I wish. No, in Canada, very difficult thing to do. So that is why I think nobody would call me a superstar. It's a tough process here in Canada. There's two different tournaments you have to qualify through. And then if you win we call it the Olympic trials. If you win that, then you get to go to the Olympics. And we were just out of the sort of pre-qualifier for that. So that was the top 16 teams in Canada. And at the time, we were ranked around, or like at my peak, we were ranked around 18 to 20 in Canada. So we just missed out on that process. But I've played against a lot of those teams. So, you know, all the teams you see in the Olympics, the U.S., they won in 2018. John Schuster, you know, played against those guys and have known all the top curlers for years, for sure.
All right. So I guess anybody who's professional is a superstar, but I guess you're not the Michael Jordan of curling. And I don't think anyone's going to want you to be the Michael Jordan of curling based on your podcast, Okay. We don't want you to get to that. But so the point is now you got introduced to it after Nagano, but in a way it was already, what is the feedback of people in the U.S., right? When it comes to curling, I mean, I think of it, okay, they got the janitors out and they're going to learn and they have great sweeping ability. That's what my response was when it first happened.
Well, it's, it is a lot of janitors, curl. They're crossover superstars. I think in the States it's growing, you know, I think the Olympics really puts it on the map every 4 years. You know, people really, really like curling, even in America. As I was alluding to earlier, in 2018, the U.S. men's team that was skipped by John Schuster won the gold medal. So I think that brought a lot of national attention to curling. And they're all really like super guys. You know, they're all Wisconsin and Minnesota guys, just laid back, really good. Really good guys you can imagine easily having a beer with while fishing. I think they did a lot for the sport in America. New curling clubs are opening all the time. They just opened a curling club in Las Vegas, actually, 2 weeks ago. So it is gaining some traction. But, yeah, it's going to take some time for people to I think, realize how tough the sport is. Because I do think a lot of people kind of think of it like you, Neil, where they turn it on, they go, you know, what is all this sweeping business? I don't get this.
Exactly. And then I'm going to laugh. Did you become a comedian after you curled because people laughed at you?
I did. Yeah. It radicalized me. It jokerfied me, Neil. I curled for so long and so many people made fun of it. I decided that I had to become a stand-up comedian.
So this is where I don't know if your brethren's going to be very happy with you. There's a new limited podcast series called Broomgate, a curling scandal. I mean, when I saw this press release, I'm like, this pitch, I'm like, okay, I'm in because I love curling, just because you brought back memories of 1998. So there you go. You already have fed into it. I was a professional wrestler at that time. I was touring in Canada. And I was introduced to curling in 1998, and I'm coming back into the ring. So I have a documentary, and I'm making a comeback into the professional wrestling ring 25 plus years later. So go figure. I retired in 99 in Bremen, Germany. But Broomgate, how did you come up with this idea for this? Did you discover something? This just seems so interesting.
Yeah, so I was kind of in the middle of it. So I wouldn't say that I discovered it necessarily. But yeah, so as you can imagine by the title of the podcast, Broomgate, it was a scandal about curling brooms, as crazy as that sounds to the average person. But yeah, basically what happened, Neil, was that in 2010, this sort of brand new broom company came on the market. And you know, previous to that, it was kind of the same three or four top dogs in the curling broom game for, you know, 50, 60 years. And so these new kids on the block, they come in 2010 with this new broom, and it's got this brand new fabric on it. So it looks the same as the other brooms, or looks similar to the other brooms. It's not like some crazy janky thing that had like a motor on it or something like that. It was, you know, it looked like a curling broom, but the fabric that comprised the broom head was essentially the most powerful broom head fabric we'd ever seen. So they come around in 2010, takes about 4 or 5 years for the pros to adopt this broom head or start to use it. Once they start to use it, they realize with a certain sweeping technique that it's basically the best broom we've ever seen, the most powerful broom we've ever seen. And as you might imagine, that sparks a lot of controversy, because people who are tied into contracts with other equipment manufacturers cannot switch to this new broom that's really good. And so they start saying that if you use it, you're a cheater, or it's unfair, or this and that. And there was a lot of infighting, near fist fights in parking lots, hotel bars, locker rooms. It all blew up. It was like a whole year of controversy, and the sport really was a mess for like an entire season.
You know, and that's the situation is, I mean, I couldn't imagine that. All right. I couldn't imagine this kind of thing, because then you got a competitive edge. I'm waiting to hear about the PDEs, right? Performance enhancement PEDs that you guys are taking, and you're hitting the gym on the steroids for curling, you know. But when they talk about a scandal like this, this is just intriguing, because you know what? I'm sure a lot of brooms were sold for this one company, and why would it be a scandal? That's I guess you have to listen to the podcast, but it must have been really a bad scandal, right?
Well, I think it's just like, to me, I always say this scandal was really about curling sort of grappling with modernity, right? It's sort of grappling with the 21st century, because, you know, we've seen this in other sports too, right? We had, you know, corked bats in baseball. We had the laser swimsuit. Remember when Speedo made that like shark suit?
Yeah.
And everybody went, is this really where we want swimming to go? And it was kind of the same thing. Pardon me. I wouldn't say that it was necessarily, it wasn't necessarily like, why don't we just let them use it or whatever. It was more, how far do we want technology to go? Like, how much do we want technology to play a role in this sport? And so I think that's where a lot of the controversy comes from, is some people said, you know, and probably similar to the swimsuits or the corked bats or whatever, people said, who cares? This is awesome. We can make every shot. That's really fun. Let's just, if everybody's using them, who cares? It doesn't matter, you know. But other people more traditionalist purists of the game said, well, you know, we still want this to be a shooter's game. We don't necessarily want this to be a sweeper's game, you know, because it's much tougher to throw than it is to sweep. And so, so I think that's really what it boiled down to, Neil, was it was just that kind of grappling with how far do we want the technology to go, what's acceptable and what's not. And that's where you ended up with a lot of this infighting that happened.
All right. Throw versus sweep. Now, our U.S.-based fans, even though we're an international show, what's the difference between throwing and sweeping?
So basically, yeah, what happens is you throw the rock, and then you have two sweepers on your team whose job is to kind of guide that rock to the other end of the ice. And so what sweeping does, very rudimentary for your American and international listeners, basically sweeping temporarily heats up the ice, so it reduces the friction between the rock and the ice, and it allows the rock to go straighter, and it allows the rock to go further. And so that was kind of the main thing. And a lot of people will tell you that the ideal sort of percentage is they want the sweeping to be about 80% of a made shot. So like, you know, you still got to be a really good thrower to make the shot. If you make a bad throw, sweeping cannot save you, right? So it's like 80% shooting, 20% sweeping. The idea is the sweepers are there to help you make the shot. They're not there to make the shot for you. And essentially what happened, pardon me, in the Broomgate year was that those percentages flipped. So now it was 20% shooting, 80% sweeping. And if you knew how to use the brooms, you could make any shot. And people did not like that. They wanted it to be in the shooter's hands. So that's why you end up with all the things that happened in the Broomgate year and then eventual rule changes that banned that broom.
All right. Okay. So people have to check out the podcast. But congratulations. You really, I mean, I know CBC is huge. Okay. Just be, you know, people have heard of the BBC, but the CBC is a pretty big thing in Canada. So you really have gone pretty well when it comes to the podcasting broadcasting thing, haven't you?
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely crazy. You know, I was involved in curling for so long. I didn't really know how interesting this story would be to a wide audience. And when we started working on it, I was working on it with a production studio in Vancouver called Kelly and Kelly. And when we were pitching it around, it actually got picked up by Ed Helm and his company, Pacific Electric. And so we not only made it with CBC, but we made it with NBC's podcasting arm, which is called USG Audio. And then we also made it with Pacific Electric and Ed Helms and his production company. So, yeah, it's a lot of heavy hitters behind it. And as you said, CBC, huge in Canada. We were actually the number one podcast in Canada last week for a few days. We took down Joe Rogan and NBC Dateline. And,
man.
We were number one for a few days. Yeah, it was very, very cool. And so, yeah, hopefully the same thing will happen in the U.S., but it's been it's been a success beyond, I think, what any of us thought already early on. And, we just hope it keeps growing because I think it's a really intriguing story. I think curling's a beautiful sport. I think the podcast has heart. It's funny. You know, even if you know nothing about curling, I really do think anybody can enjoy it.
Wow. You can at least put that on your bio. You were ranked higher than Joe Rogan in Canada for a specific amount of time. And I mean, and the other cool thing, I mean, it's just like, you know, you're on my show. I'm the number three celebrity podcast in the world, according to FeedSpot. I just got to overtake Perez Hilton and somebody else next. So there you go with me. And I have a national, it's a radio show as well.
I feel great about it.
Yeah, you definitely are the one that upticks this. I was thinking, and I said, okay. And then, you know, also CBC, you're doing much more. So people, you have other projects in CBC, right? You're working with. Is that correct? Not just podcasts.
No, it's just podcasts for now, but I have done I've done comedy on the CBC before. I've done some TV tapings for CBC and that. So maybe that's what you saw, but
yeah.
And some radio tapings too. So yeah, it's, look, you know, when you make it in Canada, that just means you get to be on the CBC. they've been awesome to work with, and their podcast arm in particular, as I'm sure you know, Neil, hosting a podcast, it's not it's not just Canada. Like their reputation is worldwide as far as the podcasts that they produce and put out. And, you know, as you can imagine, for a curling story, they were a dream distributor to work with. They've been amazing. And, yeah, nothing but good things to say about the CBC. For sure.
I'm waiting for Outside the Lines on ESPN next for John Cullen and how he's going to end up being. You should go out there for the next Winter Games and you should go because of this. And you're funny. You should seriously go pitch yourself to be a color commentator for the Olympics.
I'm in.
That sounds like your next phase. So whoever your agents are, they send that deal in and you're set, man. Because people, I remember watching curling, I felt like I was watching paint dry. So basically, there you go. You can make it so entertaining and funny. There you go. Reach out. I think you're in the next. That's your next gig.
If you're listening to this.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, you're an ESPN guy. Give me a call.
Wherever the Olympics for winter. When are the next Winter Games? When are the next Winter Games?
2026.
Where are they at? Where are they going to be in?
Italy.
Italy. See, there you go. I'm coming with you to Italy in 2026. We make it a date. All right. Appreciate it, John. Thanks again, Matt. All right. You're listening and watching the Daily Show. You're welcome. We'll be back in just a moment.